Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. With every kernel, every grain, every seed, ADM sees possibilities to improve everyday life. ADM, resourceful by nature.
Welcome to the Closing Mark Report. It's May the 23rd, 2007. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services. He's in Oakland, Illinois. And later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with the folks at Climbers in Logansport, Indiana. Kay Whitlock is away today. In today's agricultural news, one organization says, hey, it's okay with us if the U.S. and Canada open beef trade all the way up. That despite a few cases of BSE. And lawmakers say they may reorganize USDA, but they'll wait until the farm bill's been written. Dave Dickey will be along in a moment with all the day's agricultural news. And then I'll tell you about the Emerald Ash Borer. It is, after all, National Emerald Ash Borer Week. Stinky little thing was an import, and now it's killing trees all over the place. Oh, sorry about that. And don't forget to stay around. Just after the bottom of the hour, we'll talk with Drew Lerner. He's with World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. He'll join us to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast for the Midwest and the globe. It all happens on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn after corn specialists. Information on the web at agrigold.com or by contacting Regional Sales Manager Scott Williamson at 217-778-6485 for a representative nearest you.
In Chicago on this Wednesday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. Nearby July wheat, 5.5 cents higher at $4.76 and a half. September futures at $4.89 and three quarters, up 5 cents. December contract, $5.02 and a quarter, up 6 for the day. July corn futures at $3.68 and a half, down 1 cent. September futures were up 1 quarter at $3.71 and a half, and December at $3.70 and a half were up 1 and a quarter for the afternoon. Soy complex now, nearby July beans, $8.5, up 7 and a quarter. August up 8 cents at $8.08 and a quarter, and November beans at $8.30 and a half were up 8 and 1 quarter. July bean meal up $4.10 at $2.18.90. July bean oil at $34.89, that's up 0.06 for the afternoon. And the feeder cattle over at the Mercantile Exchange finished 32 and a half cents lower at $108.32 and a half a hundredweight. June futures in the live cattle pit at $91.85, down 65 cents. The August future down 32 and a half cents for the live cattle at $92.25. June lean hogs at $74.62 and a half at the end of this Wednesday afternoon were off a 2.5 cents for the afternoon. From the crude oil market, futures trading the nearby July contract at $65.78 a barrel. They're up 27 cents. And the August at $67.03, up 43. The CRB index at 311.63 is up 0.21. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average now down just about 5 points at 13,535.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us on this Wednesday afternoon to take a look at the Chicago Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange is Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Paul.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Hey, pretty good day at the Chicago Board of Trade. I want to start out with something just a little bit different because I was over at the Krannert Center this morning. All day long today and a good portion of the day tomorrow, there's a conference titled Livestock Industry and Renewable Fuels, Dynamic Opportunities and Challenges, that's been happening. And we went through some interesting figures today. One of them went through some of the biodiesel potential. And one of the figures that was touted out was that over the next 5 years, and I think these are these FAPRI numbers, this is just a study, I don't remember where it came from, that it looks like vegetable oil demand could double. And that one study this past year projected a 12 million metric ton increase, or 12.5% for total worldwide use of vegetable oils due to biodiesel use from 2005 to 2010. A little bit greater, about 13 million metric tons predicted to be increased use per food over that same period. So it looks like there could be some underpinnings behind a move at the Chicago Board of Trade in the bean pit, if not today or tomorrow, but over the coming months. And that would be predicated not on the biodiesel boom maybe here in the United States, but around the globe. What do you think?
Well, I think that's one reason why we have 35-cent oil at the Chicago Board of Trade. It's no secret that the Malaysian palm oil demand for the biodiesel is enormous. It's also factored in that, the vegetable oil demand in the Pacific Rim, India, and China is enormous for edible purposes, but also Europe has been extremely aggressive on this. It's the soybean oil supply versus the U.S. demand domestically is one thing, but it's the world demand that's really pushing the bean oil price up. I can also say that there's a lot of people investing in soy diesel plants, but I still have a preference in profitability scale, and the corn ethanol being a big leader, I'd still put more money in the corn ethanol than I would the biodiesel, just mainly because of the ease of gaining the supply. And it's a very competitive market, and unless you have a big soybean plant churning out a lot of soybean oil, it's a hard game to play.
In fact, maybe we should talk a little bit more about both of those things. You mentioned that it's palm oil that leads this. I believe that about 80% of the vegetable oil produced in the world is palm oil. Most of that comes out of Indonesia and Malaysia, and that's why that's been leading soybean oil prices higher. So we can understand that a little better, why we have record high soybean oil prices at 35 cents. I did see a figure that suggested that at 35 or 36 cents that it wasn't actually profitable for a biodiesel plant to make soybean oil into biodiesel, I suppose.
But as a owner of farmland, I welcome all demand from either corn or soybean oil because it is a good product and people love it. And, it's quite a deal. And, of course, there is a lot of new technology going into diesel fuel and cleaner diesel, and so we welcome that big industry as well.
And let me go through a couple of other figures here with you real quickly from this morning. These are the adjustments. Let me see if I can get this right because I'm just reading a PowerPoint presentation. The adjustments to cattle because of ethanol. So they say that the change in feed cost because of ethanol for beef cattle goes up 6%, for hogs up 18% if they're feeding DDGs, and for poultry up 27%. The quantity produced down just only 0.5% for the beef. Hogs down 3.27%, poultry off 4.8%, and then the net change, where's the change in the farm price? Beef cattle go up 2.4%, price of swine up 9.3%, and the poultry industry up 19%. I suppose the beef and cattle producers ought to be happy about that. If it costs chicken more, they might be able to put more animals into the marketplace at some point. So I guess the livestock industry, while it might be paying higher prices for that feed, will be producing a higher-priced product in the end.
Well, and most livestock people, raise corn and have their own storage bins and are willing to roll with the punches. What's the sad factor here is that the price of corn has been undervalued for 50 to 75 years, and, we're now starting to get it into a fair price and putting a little excitement in the Midwest and even in the world with this renewable energy. And gee whiz, the poor consumer needs all the relief he can get with this $3.29 to $3.40 gasoline in the United States. So, with basically relatively cheap corn here on the Chicago Board of Trade, it's still a wonderful way to improve the price of corn, convert it to a clean energy, a renewable energy, a green energy, and we also know the friends there at University of Illinois and SIU are doing some research now to improve that technology. So, it's a thumbs-up deal, and we do have a lot of acres of corn planted in the Midwest to take advantage of that new demand.
SIU, of course, SIU Edwardsville has the ethanol pilot plant, and there are more than 60 faculty and staff here at the university that have been working on all types of ethanol products over the last several years, and some of those are beginning to yield some interesting results. We'll talk about those probably more as the future comes quickly towards us. Thanks for indulging me as we went through some of those numbers. Maybe we better talk a little bit about the corn market. You said cheap corn in Chicago. Tell me why you think that's the case.
Well, you know, we... You know, the price of corn has been basically undervalued so long, and, you know, I'm the first to tip my hat to at least better price levels. The corn market actually went down today a penny a bushel. The big tug of war is what and when and where is the rainfall event and how much is going to occur over the next 5 to 10 days. Private meteorologist I talked to about 1 o'clock today said, you know, in the next 5 to 7 days, he thinks central Illinois will have an inch of rain. And I said, what about our friends in southern Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio? And he says, they'll get less. But he said, you're in the bullseye of at least in the next 5 to 10 days of probably an inch of rain. We need it. The marketplace knows we need it. And the area that when we do talk to these meteorologists, they say the first question asked is, will the southeast and delta get rain? And the answer is, you know, maybe some point in time, but not on the immediate radar scope of a 10-day forecast. So that's what's keeping the market very strong. Also, the major factor here is one-third the beans acres are in the delta or the southeast. And that's one reason why we're seeing this price push in the soybean market new strength in here, and why the bean chart looks so much different than the corn chart.
None the corn chart, I'm compelled to ask at this point, despite the fact that you may have this covered on your crop insurance. When you look out into the future of the marketplace, USDA, others are saying, you know, this corn market may only be worth 340, 320, 350 on the cash side of the market. Do you encourage producers to go ahead and make sales at some point on new crop, and at what levels should they take advantage of spikes in the marketplace?
Well,
if you
there's
do that.
Spike, you know, we always have talked to this magic $4 mark, and you know, that's a area that's a great deal of interest. But what it boils down to is if the USDA acreage numbers are correct, and you know, that's a big if, but we do think the boys went out and pushed a lot of corn acres in the ground in the United States. If that's correct, it, you know, it only takes a yield drop in maybe 20-25% of the U.S. to make a difference. Now, I know there were some studies earlier in the year that wasn't a factor, but it is a factor. And our contention is that, you know, if you do get this yield in that 150, 151 area, you know, it does augur price support. We do know the recent USDA increase in usage of 200 million bushels, you know, in ethanol usage, you know, will take place mainly in the next third and fourth quarter of next year. That doesn't mean there isn't going to be increased demand from that area, but it also means that we know that the price of fuel is very strong, and it more or less kind of sets it up in concrete, Todd, that we will have a continuation of expansion in ethanol.
Paul, we appreciate you being with us.
Have a profitable day.
Hey, you too. Paul Cooley is with ADM Investor Services out of Oakland, Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report on Wednesday afternoons.
The Carl Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carl Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
Here's AM 580 Ed Kieser's forecast, actually Mike Sola's forecast for tonight across the two-state region. He says clear to partly cloudy skies. Lows will range from 59 in southeastern Indiana to 69 in the west central parts of Illinois. Tomorrow in western Illinois, partly sunny, a chance of a few scattered thunderstorms during the afternoon. Dave Dickey is here now. He'll help you take a complete look at today's agricultural newscast. This is WILL AM 580.
In agricultural news, the World Organization for Animal Health has granted the U.S. and Canada controlled risk status in regard to their management of mad cow disease. The designation means the OIE believes the U.S. and Canada should be able to trade beef products from cattle of any age without international hindrance. USDA Secretary Mike Johanns called for countries to remove their trade barriers against U.S. beef.
We hope it's the first step in the final chapter on what I think was one of the most unbelievable trade distortions of all time, and that was the closing the borders relative to BSD issues. So it's very good news. We're going to do everything we can now to move with our trading partners to try to get their borders open.
The OIE did find that the U.S. lacks a strong animal identification and traceability system. Lawmakers are hinting that they may consider reorganization of USDA after the Farm Bill is finished. The reorganization effort is motivated in part by dissatisfaction with the Natural Resources Conservation Service and Farm Service Agency. House Agriculture Committee Chairman Colin Peterson says, and this is a direct quote, "Our next mission is to look at the structure of USDA and see if it delivers." Sources say that North Dakota Democrat Kent Conrad is preparing a version of the commodity title of the Farm Bill that differs significantly from the vision of Senate Ag Committee Chairman Tom Harkin. Conrad's version focuses most of its intention on traditional row crop commodities. Harkin has strongly suggested to shift funding to renewable fuels, conservation, and rural development, potentially at the expense of the commodity title. Conrad not only serves on the Senate Ag Committee, Conrad is also the chair of the Senate Budget Committee. The House Agriculture Conservation Credit, Energy, and Research Subcommittee yesterday completed markup of the conservation, research, energy, and credit titles of the Farm Bill. Amendments included proposals to take land out of the Conservation Reserve Program and put it back into production. And the bill would also expand the authority of farm credit institutions to make loans. The credit title could prove to be one of the most controversial in the bill. Farm Credit Council officials say the amendment did not expand authority enough, while the American Bankers Association said it was extremely disappointed by the expansion of authority. And Iowa State University's research team has filed suit in federal court against Monsanto over patents of low linolenic acid soybeans. ISU says Monsanto infringed on patents covering breeding methods and manufacture of the beans. Monsanto says it developed its version of the beans using publicly available germplasm, and it says ISU's suit is without merit. Monsanto also revealed it attempted to reach an agreement with ISU, which is seeking an injunction and award of damages based on what it calls the willful and wanton nature of Monsanto's conduct. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your Director of Agricultural Programming here at the WILL radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week, reminding you to visit our website at willag.org. While you're there, please sign up for our weekend newsletter. It's absolutely free. Just hit subscribe on willag.org. Well, up next, it's National Emerald Ash Borer Week. If you have an ash tree in your yard, now's the time to begin checking it for emerald ash borers in the adult beetle stage, according to University of Illinois Extension entomologist Phil Nixon. May 20th to the 26th is Emerald Ash Borer Awareness Week because it coincides with the time of year that the adult beetles begin to emerge. Phil Nixon says the emerald ash borer is a serious insect.
It's going to cause the trees to decline. You'll see dieback in the top of a tree at first, and you get holes that are going to be about an eighth of an inch in diameter. If you peel back the bark, there will be you'll have trails right underneath the bark in what we call the cambium area, and those are the larval tunnels. And when the larval tunnels go all the way around the tree, you end up having the tree, that part, anything above that part on the tree will die, and eventually it will kill the tree.
The emerald ash borer is a beetle. It's metallic, emerald green in color, and about half an inch in length with a bullet-shaped body. There are a whole bunch of look-alike insects, so Nixon says to look for the telltale signs. The emerald ash borer is flat on the bottom and round on the top. When it tunnels out of the tree, it leaves a very distinctive D-shaped hole, flat on one side and round on the other. If you find those holes in your ash tree, then Phil Nixon says it's definitely time to call your local extension office because the tree is not yet a lost cause.
Not necessarily. There are insecticide applications that can be made, and what's most effective are those that are systemic, that are is insecticides that will go in through the tree and move through the tree. These are going to be applied either through injection through the bark or to the soil or just applied to the bark surface. And these will go into the tree and move through the tree, kill the larvae within the tree.
Early indications suggest a tree under attack by the emerald ash borer has a chance to survive if treated. Researchers do not know for how long or just how well, although some treated trees in Illinois appear to be on the road to recovery. The emerald ash borer was first identified in ash trees near Detroit in 2002 and has since spread to neighboring states, most likely via packing materials and firewood. The larvae overwinter in the bark. Adult beetles emerge from the wood during May and June, then go on to infest a new neighborhood of unsuspecting ash trees. Nixon says that on their own power, the beetles only travel about half a mile a year. As with many other invasive species, with the assistance of humans, the emerald ash borer can travel much greater distances and infest ash trees just about anywhere. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on WILL Urbana. We're joined on this Wednesday afternoon to take a look at the cash grain market by the folks at the Climbers. That's the Andersons in Logansport, Indiana. Hi, good afternoon to you.
Good morning, Todd. This is Jim Cripe you have
Hi.
Today.
Good afternoon to you, Jim. Tell me about your area and how things have gone for the planting season, both corn and soybeans, and where we are now.
Well, you know, I would summarize this area as just as fully planted. Corn is anywhere from just emerging. Some of the really later planted stuff that's just coming up, you may classify it just a little bit uneven because of the dry topsoil. But we've got corn anywhere from, just coming through the ground to maybe as high as 8 or 10 inches. So, but virtually all done, and I would say while we feel a little bit dry, we're in pretty good shape.
And the soybeans are all done, is that as well, you mean?
Soybeans done as well, and they're looking good.
And everybody's looking for rain. Everything's looking good. USDA said that was the case on Monday of this week. How's the cash grain market and holding up in the face of what could be a really good crop if we make it all the way to the fall in this shape?
Well, so far, your cash grain has been strong all the way through the planting season and here post-planting. Farmer movement has been very light after fairly heavy winter movement. You've got our Climbers Indiana ethanol plant came online, started grinding corn about 3 weeks ago. So its appetite is fairly large. Lafayette, Tate & Lyle, their basis has been strong. So all in all, lack of farmer movement has led to a stronger cash corn basis here.
You'll have to forgive me. Are you at the elevator or are you at the ethanol plant?
Our Climbers, the Andersons elevator and ethanol plant are together, and it's just 14 miles of road from our Delphi location for where we used to talk to you from.
Okay, so you're at the plant, though?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, at the ethanol plant.
Yeah, at the ethanol plant.
And production kicked off nicely?
Yeah, we've had a couple blips, I think, as you would with any big plant like this start up, but we're grinding corn every day.
And how much capacity do you have on a daily basis in gallons, and how much corn can you store?
estimator here in Climbers is 4.5 million bushels, and we're grinding at full capacity. We'll be slightly something more than 110,000 bushels a day.
So you have more. unlike some other places, which might have 10 days on hand, you have as much as you could possibly want on hand.
We're going to find that out some August, I'm afraid. But yes, we have 40 days worth of storage or so.
You're doing okay. Better give me your bids for the day.
Looks like corn today, we're 8 under the May here for May at $3.60. June 6 under, $3.62. New crop corn, $3.40.
All right, Jim, we appreciate it.
Thank you, Todd.
Jim Kripe is at the Climbers. That's the Andersons, and he's at the new ethanol plant there. We appreciate him filling in this afternoon for Kay Whitlock, who was out of the office. In 2 minutes, we'll take a look at the weather. Your regional newscast comes up right now.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jim Meadows. The Illinois House voted 115-0 today for a plan that tightened restrictions on teen driver's licenses. The measure would require teens to take 50 hours of driver's training over 9 months instead of 3, move curfews up an hour for teen drivers, and prohibit them from having more than one other teen in the car for their first driving year. The bill has already passed the state Senate and now goes to the governor's desk. School officials in the Peoria County town of Elmwood say a Marine killed in Iraq this week was a friend that everyone leaned on at his 200-student high school. The Defense Department says 21-year-old Lance Corporal Benjamin Desolitz was killed yesterday while conducting combat operations in Anbar Province. Champaign police are seeking the public's help in connection with an overnight home invasion that left 2 men hospitalized with gunshot wounds. Officers say just after midnight last night, 2 men forced their way into an apartment in the 1400 block of West Anthony Drive in the Dobbins Down neighborhood. One of the invaders shot the victims. Police are looking for 2 black males, one of them 5'10 to 6 feet in height in his 20s with a muscular build, the other about 5'5 in height in his late teens or early 20s with a slender build, wearing a dark hooded sweatshirt and dark pants. Anyone with information should call the Champaign Police or Crime Stoppers at 373-TIPS. Indiana Governor Mitch Daniels says record-high gasoline prices haven't changed his mind about suspending the state sales tax on gasoline. But his administration is now trying to determine if he could even do that if he wanted. The late Governor Frank O'Bannon used a 1981 law to temporarily suspend the tax in 2000 when gas cost $1.80 a gallon. The administration is researching whether a threshold for declaring an energy emergency under that 1981 law is being met now. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
I'm Todd Gleason, AM 580 Agriculture. Jim, $1.80 a gallon sounds awful nice. I bet it does to Drew Lerner out in Kansas City, too, who joins us on this Wednesday afternoon to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. Hi, Drew.
Good afternoon. Yeah, I'd take that in a minute.
Yeah, you'd take that in a minute. But, you know, I don't know, ethanol, whether we could actually make it all work right with the $1.80 gas. So I live with what you got and be happy, all right?
There you go.
There we go. Speaking of being happy, farmers might like a little rainfall, and I hear you're saying they could get some.
Well, they could, but we're not going to look at a big soaker, I think. The models are trying real hard to produce rain across a big part of the Midwest, and I think there's going to be rain. I don't want to totally mislead everybody here, but I do think that some of the lower Ohio River Basin crop areas are going to still have a tough time getting normal rainfall. There's been a general tendency here in recent weeks for less than usual rainfall across a big part of the eastern Midwest, but especially in the south. And I think that is probably going to continue, even though we are opening the door of opportunity for some timely rainfall. And the bottom line to all this means that there will be some relief to the drier bias, but we are not going to see our soil moisture and rainfall totals end up being normal. They're still going to be a little bit on the low side. But nevertheless, for a crop to establish well, we're under a pretty good environment right now with the timeliness of rainfall coming up, which should be sufficient in stimulating some aggressive crop development or continuing it, and a little bit of relief in Illinois. I know that's very important right now. Those east central areas are very, very dry right now. There's some other areas scattered about in the eastern Midwest that really need a good drink of water. Some rain will fall in all of these areas, but as far as something that's going to last for an extended period of time, we're probably going to have to wait a while longer.
What can we expect for our Memorial Day weekend?
Well, I think it should be okay if you're looking for rain. If you're trying to do a picnic, it may be a little bit difficult for some areas. Now, most of the precipitation that occurs initially during the early part of this holiday weekend will probably not be too terribly bad. There's just some random showers that pop up in the late afternoon. It's nothing that's really all that unusual for this time of the year. But as we get towards the end of the weekend into the early part of next week, some of those thunderstorms will become a little bit mean-looking. I think we'll probably see some locally heavy rainfall, maybe even a couple of severe thunderstorms possible, especially as we go into late Monday and on into Tuesday. I know Tuesday is not part of the weekend, so hopefully we'll get this to delay just by 12 hours or so, and we'll end up getting through the weekend without a lot of difficulty. And that is true for areas, of course, west or east of the Mississippi River. For areas to the west, it'll be a pretty stormy weekend with a lot of shower and thunderstorm activity, and the potential for severe weather is much higher in those areas.
Drew, we appreciate you being with us today.
Well, thank you very much. Have a good day.
You too. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. Joins us here on the Closing Mark Report each and every Wednesday afternoon. Don't forget to visit our website if you want to hear what Drew had to say again. You can do that at willag.org. You have a great afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason.